You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This will be part two of my analysis, commentary, opinions on the Republican candidates debate last week. I'm sorry that I had to wait to Tuesday, but we had a holiday, Martin Luther King Day, and as a result, the campus was closed Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and this is the first time I've had a chance really to complete it. I started on it in part one, and I really addressed what you probably have heard in the news, and there were two real encounters between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. Donald Trump is still, on national polls, the front runner by a large margin. However, in Iowa, Ted Cruz and Donald Trump are really neck and neck. Depends on which poll. Some days it's Donald Trump's ahead, some days Ted Cruz is. We'll see. Because polls are a snapshot. You really need to look at trends. And what we're talking about in Iowa are caucuses, where it's absolutely essential to get your people out. And it's cold, snowing in parts of Iowa. So you really have to be for your candidate and go to the caucuses. And the way they work, there's usually a set time you get there and you divide up into, if you're a Trump supporter, you'll go in one corner. If you're a Cruz supporter in another, if you're for Marco Rubio in another. And depending on how many people show up, you'll get, they'll do a count and then the results are reported. And then the candidates, remember, this is very much a proportional caucus. So depending on how many people support you in the caucus, you'll get certain number of delegates. That's how it works. And we're less than 2 weeks away. And right now you're seeing, and I'm seeing on television in the newsroom, the candidates are running their ads. Now, I'm in Texas, so the important ads are the ones that are running locally, both today in Iowa and really starting at the same time, more or less, although New Hampshire's a week after, is ads in New Hampshire. Now, if you listen to prior shows, you know that I've warned you about the polls. You know, any candidate can be up in the poll one day, down the next. The important thing is the overall trends, and you got to be very, very, very careful with the national polls. Even though Donald has a big lead, Donald Trump has a big lead, what really matters, because there's no national election, no one goes out on the same day and pulls the lever for a candidate. It's very much state by state. So what's important is really the state polls, and in turn, can those poll numbers be translated into votes? And in turn, the votes translated into delegates. It's all about winning 1,237 delegates. That's 50% plus one. And you need to get that very, very clear, though. The person that's going to win and get the Republican nomination has to do that. And many of the earlier primaries are not winner-take-all. They're proportional. So in the earlier races, depending on, again, to what extent you can translate your poll numbers into actual voters coming out and in turn delegates. That's what matters in the early primaries and caucus states. However, once we get through February, starting in March and April, you're going to have winner take all. And probably the one that I'm watching the closest is who's going to win in Florida, because whoever wins in Florida gets all 50 delegates. And there are other states that have the same situation. So that's what you need to look to. And I think Florida will really sort out the men from the boys. And right now, it looks like Donald Trump is going to win. Yes, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and Ted Cruz will get double digits, I think, in terms of their supporters coming out. But the key is you got to win the majority. And Donald Trump has figured it out in the sense that he has gone after and made illegal immigration the premier or most prominent issue in his campaign. So that's more or less an update. Now, people pay attention to the debates. Not everyone watches it. I think a little over 11 million people watch this debate. Now, that's unfortunate because in some of the earlier debates, you were in over 20 million. And we're not done with the debates. We still have a debate before the two, the caucus in Iowa and the primary in New Hampshire. And then we have another debate in late February. Going into March, I think it's the 26th. And the big date is March 1st. For in Texas, we have our primary on the 1st. So I give you that as background. Now, what was unfortunate was there were only 11 million people watching. I wish, and I include myself in this, I simply didn't have the time. I don't have a television at home, so I can't watch it at home. So I have to look at it after the fact. But I wanted to zero in on that part of the debate that affects all of you, and that's tax. Why immigration is a very important issue, and I think that's why Trump is going to get the nomination and ultimately win. What's equally important is taxes, and I've looked at this, and this is not going to be a boring commentary on each candidate's plan. They all have a plan, but I wanted to point something out. And I will do it after I played all of them. I've got not all the clips I have of it. So I want to start out with Chris Christie. Now, Chris Christie is the governor of New Jersey. He's doing okay in New Hampshire. I don't think he's going to win. Well, first of all, I don't think he's going to be in the top three in Iowa. I think that's Trump, Ted Cruz. And I don't know who's going to be third. It could be Rand Paul. Like I said, don't count Rand Paul out, or it could be Marco Rubio. Marco Rubio is trying to come in third. He really more or less has to come in third, or I don't think he's going to be around much longer. But the fight right now is who will be the establishment candidate. And the leading contenders, at least from the beginning, it was Jeb Bush, but he has been up and down. I'm not counting Jeb Bush out because he has a lot of money, and money counts. You need money to get out your message. But he really has not had a stellar debate performance, and that's a problem for him. And what you're seeing right now is to get back in the race by all the establishment candidates, what they're running, their super PACs as well as their own PACs and campaign, they're running advertising. Now, some of that advertising is very positive. It's introducing the candidate to you. Now, why they wait to now is very, very simple. People start to pay attention. Now, I'm not really paying attention because March 1st is where the voters in Texas go. But if you're in Iowa, for example, you're paying a lot of attention to the ads for a while. Then they get rather old. And there are two types. You have the positive campaign ad that's more or less introducing the candidate, highlighting what he stands for. Then you have the negative ad that attacks one or more of the opponent and then usually ends it up what the candidate is for and to please vote for him. Now, negative ads are used for the simple reason they get results. They're effective. That's why people use negative ads, and that's what you need to be aware of. So if you're in Iowa and New Hampshire, you know what I'm talking about. So let's go back to the debate, even though it was last week. It's was, I've heard this comment amongst several people that have seen the entire debate. I have still not had time to see the entire debate, although I have seen large chunks of it. And I'm going to play you one of those large chunks in a second. But it was the best debate. So if you really have not seen the debates, what I suggest you do is listen to this one in its entirety. And you can do that by going to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's my companion blog for this show. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photograph, I'm yours truly in the studio, are the last 60 to 80 shows. And below that, you have what I call my show prep notes, which consist of articles, YouTube videos, charts, photographs. It depends on what news story I'm covering. Now, what I'd like to do is start off, and I'll probably start it and stop it. I was thinking about just playing the entire thing, but I think it's around 12 minutes. A series of questions asked by the candidates that relate to taxes. Let me play. Started off, and I think it's with Chris.
Governor Christie, we have spoken much about cutting spending, given the $19 trillion debt. But according to one report, America needs $3.6 trillion in infrastructure spending by 2020. Here in South Carolina, 11% of bridges are considered structurally deficient, costing drivers a billion pairs. What is your plan to fix the ailing roads and bridges across the country without breaking the bank?
Well, I'm glad you asked it, Maria. Here's our plan. We've all been talking about tax reform tonight, and paying for infrastructure is caught right up in tax reform. If you reform the corporate tax system in this country, which, as mentioned before, is the highest rate in the world, and we double tax, as you know, and what that's led to is over $2 trillion of American companies' monies that are being kept offshore because they don't want to pay the second tax. And who can blame them? They pay tax once overseas. They don't want to pay 35% tax on the way back. So beside reforming that tax code, bringing it down to 25% and eliminating those special interest loopholes that the lobbyists and the lawyers and the accountants have given, bring that rate down to 25%, but also a one-time repatriation of that money, bring the money, the $2 trillion, back to the United States. We'll tax it that one time at 8.75%, because 35% of zero is zero. But 8.75% of $2 trillion is a lot of money, and I would then dedicate that money to rebuilding infrastructure here in this country. It would not necessitate us raising any taxes. It would bring the money back into the United States to help build jobs by American companies and get our economy moving again and growing at a much higher rate. And it would rebuild those roads and bridges and tunnels that you were talking about. And the last piece of this, Marie, is this. You know, the fact is that this president has penalized corporations in America. He's penalized, he doesn't understand that what that does is hurt hardworking taxpayers. You've seen middle class wages go backwards $3,700 during the Obama administration. That's wrong for hardworking taxpayers in this country. We'd rebuild infrastructure that would also create jobs in this country, and we'd work with the states to do it the right way, to do it more efficiently and more effectively. And remember this, I'm credible on this for this reason. Americans for Tax Reform says that I've vetoed more tax increases than any governor in American history. We don't need to raise taxes to get this done. We need to make the government run smarter and better and reform this corporate tax system, bring that money back to the United States to build jobs and rebuild our infrastructure. And we need to use it also to protect our grid from terrorists. All of those things are important, and all those things would happen in a Christie administration.
Thank you.
That was Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. Let me point a couple of things out. First of all, is this a very creative solution? I'm going to lower the corporate tax rate to 25%. I have no problem with that, but is that really the answer, Governor? You see, a recurring theme you're going to hear in all these responses to questions is there's no fundamental reform of the tax system. They want to tinker with it. And I'm with Milton Friedman. Any cut in taxes, I'm in favor of. I have no problem if you want to cut it from 39% to 25%. And yeah, he wants to bring the money home that U.S. corporations stay abroad, where, remember, they have operations abroad, they earn money, and they're taxed on it. And then when they bring it home, they're double taxed. And actually triple taxed, because if they send you a dividend, that's taxed. Chris Christie is a good example of an establishment Republican. He's for the status quo. Oh, we'll tweak it around the edges. especially to make you believe that this is fundamental reform. And yeah, the corporations are all for reducing taxes. But did he mention doing away with all income taxes? You see, I favor a broad-based consumption tax with a tax prebate, in other words, for people that are earning below the median income of the United States, which is in the $50,000, by the way, for a household. You wouldn't be paying any taxes. No income taxes, nor any payroll taxes. The way a consumption tax works is it would do away, and I'm going to give you my version to keep it simple, but if you're new to this, there are literally a dozen, several dozen videos on the Fair Tax. My Fair Tax Less plan, and I have my own, would do away with all federal taxes or replace all federal taxes with one single tax, and it's 20%. I'm not happy with 20%. I actually think it can be lower, but you got to start somewhere. And the way it works is, and I always use my loaf of bread example to explain this, and I'll elaborate a little bit more. I just wanted so you get an alternative here. The first key point is you won't be paying individuals, corporations, partnerships, estates, gifts. There's no more income tax. We're doing away with income taxation as the basis for the government getting its revenues. All of that would be gone. You wouldn't be paying for it. In other words, there's no tax on income at all or labor, and there's no tax on capital gains on your investments. So when you go sell your house, there's no tax on it. When you go sell your mutual funds, there's no tax on it. So we replace all those taxes, including the alternative minimum tax, capital gains taxes, personal income taxes, payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, disability would all be gone. And you won't need the IRS to collect it. You won't need tens of thousands of IRS employees to collect it. You're going to need some, but nowhere near. I think you could do it with 1,000 people or less, by the way, if we had a broad-based consumption tax. And what would be the tax? It's 20% when you go buy, I'm using a loaf of bread just to illustrate. You go to your local grocery store, you see a price. It says $1 for a loaf of bread. You take it to the counter. You rush in, get a loaf of bread, take it to the counter. It's rung up as $1. $1. Is there additional tax? No, there's no additional tax. Why? Embedded in that $1 price of the bread are all the federal taxes that you're paying now. Personal, corporate, payroll are embedded in that $1 price. That $1 loaf of bread, it's been estimated approximately 23 cents of that $1 is federal taxes. Quite a lot, isn't it? So when we do away with that tax, that $1 loaf of bread will go down in price. But here's the thing. You got to pay 20% consumption. It's a consumption tax. What I call fair tax less, you'd pay 20% on it. So you still, in essence, you'd pay the same $1. Now, here's why. Now, some people will say, well, that's just a national sales tax. Well, not quite. And here's why it's not quite. One of the criticisms, and it's a very valid criticism of the sales tax, as well as payroll taxes for Social Security and Medicare, it's regressive. It hits lower income people much greater than people that are making a lot more money. Everyone would be paying the same rate of 20%, but they also, everyone would get what's called a tax prebate. Now, under my fair tax plan, what would that be? Every adult American citizen, 18 years or older, would get every month a check for $1,000. From the government. Yes, you heard that right. You'd be receiving a check at the beginning of the month for $1,000. It would go in your checking account or it could go on a card. But that's a detail. But this is a very important point. So at the end of the year, you would have gotten 12 checks for a total of $12,000. Why would the government be sending you a check? Is this a new welfare program? No. We don't want to have our tax system regressive. And payroll taxes and sales taxes are today regressive. Lower incomes pay more as a percentage of their taxes as a percent of their income. So let's use the example of that loaf of bread. You are paying the same price of $1, but what the retailer will do is send to the federal government 20 cents out of that dollar. And on your receipt, it will indicate that 20% is the consumption tax or the fair tax less. The FTL, fair tax less, is 20%. And if your total purchase was a dollar, 20 cents of that dollar goes to the federal government. Now, how would it work? Today, in most states, I think 46, 47 states, we have sales tax that are regressive. There's no prebate. But the retailer sends that tax in to the state, and it's audited and it's tracked. What we would do is add that 20 cents with a small fee to the merchant retailer, as well as the state for collecting it. And the balance, which is about 19 cents, goes to the federal government. So let's get back to the person that gets, everyone would get 12 checks of $1,000 each. If you're a married couple, let's say you're both working, it doesn't matter whether you're working or not, by the way, and it doesn't matter what your income is. Your wife or spouse would get, she would get 12 checks for $1,000. In other words, it doesn't matter how poor you are or rich you are, whether you're married or not, adult citizens every month will get a $1,000 check. To pay for what? To pay for the tax, the fair tax less or consumption tax on the necessities of life. Now, I know in Texas, but in other states, you've seen people on food stamps or in welfare where they have a voucher and only certain things are covered. We're not going to, and that delays checking out, by the way. That's not how we're handling the necessities. Everyone has to pay the tax. In a separate mailing, you get that prebate and you pay the tax. In effect, what that means is if you're making $60,000 and you spend the entire $60,000, 20% of $60,000 is $12,000. That equals the $12,000 tax prebate you got. In other words, what have you paid for the essentials of life? The answer is zero. What is your tax rate? Zero. Now, here's what it's important to understand. When you make more money and spend more money above $60,000, you're still going to be paying that 20% tax, and there's no prebate. You see, the prebate is to make the fair tax progressive. It is to help the people that are being squeezed, the people making less than the median income in the United States, which is roughly, this is a ballpark figure, and we don't have the 2015 numbers yet. It's about 55,000. So 60,000 is very, very close to what the median income is. I'm using this as an example so you understand it. But let's listen a little further.
Dr. Carson, it is true U.S. companies have $2 trillion in cash sitting overseas right now. That could be used for investment and jobs in America. Also, several companies right now are pursuing mergers to move their corporate headquarters abroad and take advantage of much lower taxes. What will you do to stop the flow of companies building cash away from America and those leaving America altogether?
Well, I would suggest a fair tax system, and that's what we have proposed. A flat tax for everybody, no exemptions, no deductions, no shelters, because some people have a better capability of taking advantage of those things than others. You know, and then the other thing we have to do is stop spending so much money. My mother taught me this. You know, she only had a third grade education, but, you know, she knew how to stretch a dollar. I mean, she would drive a car until it wouldn't make a sound and then gather up all her coins and buy a new car. In fact, if my mother were Secretary of Treasury, we would not be in a deficit situation. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, if we fix the taxation system, make it absolutely fair, and get rid of all of the incredible regulations, because every regulation is a tax. It's on goods and services, and it's the most regressive tax that there is. You know, when you go into the store and buy a box of laundry detergent and the price has gone up, you know, 50 cents because of regulations, a poor person notices that. A rich person does not. Middle class may notice it when they get to the cash register, and everything is costing more money. And we are killing our people like this. And Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton will say it's those evil rich people. It's not the evil rich people. It's the evil government that is putting all these regulations on us so that we can't survive.
Now, Ben Carson brings up a couple of points. He's in favor of fair tax. And when Steve Forbes was running for president, I think in 96, 92 or 96, I'm pretty sure it's 96, and he's from New Jersey. And yes, he's that Steve Forbes, the family that used to own Forbes magazine. Anyway, he was for the fair tax, which is a keeping the income tax, but everyone would pay the same rate. And Ben Carson's, I believe it's 10%. I was a big advocate for the fair tax. Get rid of most, if not all, deductions, exemptions. Everyone pay the same rate. Doesn't mean they pay the same amount or the same rate. But if you see something better, don't you change your mind? I've changed my mind. Why? The fair tax, as well as my version of it, the fair tax less. We do away with the IRS. We don't need the IRS. Because we no longer would pay an income tax, which requires you to spend hours filling out a income tax form, which is an invasion of your privacy when you think about the information they want, and what they call compliance costs. Why, for a single person not making a much money, it's not that hard. It probably you could do it in an hour or two. But if you're a business owner, especially a small business owner, anyone that's involved in businesses typically will, if you're a sole proprietor, for example, it can be very, very involved. And the compliance costs have been estimated, and they've been going up, up, and up, is anywhere from $300 billion per year to $500 billion plus, and I think it's closer to $500 billion, by the way. That's a waste of money. That's a waste of time and money. If you're going to replace all income taxes, in other words, the basis of taxation will no longer be income. The problem with Ben Carson, and there's several of the candidates that are recommending a so-called flat tax, you still have the IRS regulations, you still have the IRS, and what happens invariably happens. The next time the Democrats get elected, they jack around with the rates and they up them. You see, in the long run, what you need to do is repeal, I believe it's the 16th Amendment. I always get them confused, but I'm pretty sure it's the 16th. Repeal the amendment that allows an income tax. Because we're not going to have an income tax. We're not going to have payroll taxes. We're not going to have an alternative minimum tax. What the tax has is a prebate. And that means the people that are hurt the most by income taxes and, more importantly, payroll taxes will not be paying income or payroll taxes. And as long as you're making less than the median income, if you're single, making $60,000 or less, the prebate offsets the $1,000 a month prebate for 12 months, $12,000. 20% of $60,000 is $12,000. You won't pay any taxes. You won't be, the net tax that you pay is zero. Now, let me repeat, everyone, when they go to the counter, pays 20%, and that's sent to the government. But the government sent you a check in the first of the month to offset the consumption tax for that first $12,000. One of the big advantages, you do away with compliance costs. There's no more tax returns. There's no more April 15th or the months prior to it, wasting your time and money trying to figure out how much you owe the government, because it's collected every single day you buy something, new goods and services. I need to emphasize that. Not used services, not used houses, and no taxes on investment. You're paying it. That's how it's collected. It is simple. It is fair. And most people will pay a lot less in taxes. The people who will be paying more taxes are those that earn a lot of income and spend a lot of income. What we're doing is taxing consumption or spending. Now, before I forget, because Chris Christie mentioned this as well as Carson, if we had a broad-based consumption tax along the lines of either a fair tax or a fair tax less, what would happen? U.S. corporations would come back to the United States. The United States would be the best country to be located in because there's no tax on income and no tax on capital. It wouldn't be a one-time tax if you think of Christie's. That's why, forget about Christie. He's not going to win anything. He's an establishment candidate. He's for the status quo. And he's not very creative, but he was a prosecutor. Just remember that. And he's really not that popular in his state. But you heard his proposal. Ben Carson has a better tax proposal. But it's not the best tax proposal. It is a flat tax, which is good. I like it. But why stop there? Do away with the IRS, do away with tax returns, do away with invading your privacy, do away with the compliance costs, make it simple, make it fair, and everyone knows exactly what everyone is paying in terms of the rate, because everyone pays the same rate and everyone gets the same tax prebate. In other words, a check for the government every month. Now let's continue.
Maria, what you were talking about just now is called corporate inversion. It's one of the biggest problems our country has. Right now, corporations by the thousands are thinking of leaving our country. With the jobs, leave them behind. They're leaving because of taxes, but they're also leaving because they can't get their money back in. And everybody agrees, Democrats and Republicans, that it should come back in, but they can't get along. They can't even make a deal. Here's a case. They both agree. They can't make a deal. We have to do something. Corporate inversion is one of the biggest problems we have. So many companies are going to leave our country.
Donald Trump raises an important point. Corporations have been leaving this country, changing their headquarters for tax reasons, and there's estimated over $2 trillion, $2,000 billion are sitting offshore in the bank accounts of U.S. corporations. Well, then why, Mr. Trump, as well as the other candidates, did you not support a broad-based consumption tax? Because if we had a broad-based consumption tax, you would get a rush back into the United States. It would be a stampede by the corporations that have the money overseas to get back into the United States. Why? First of all, they won't pay any taxes on it. There's no one-time 8% or 5%. There's no one-time. This is a new way of collecting taxes, not on income. In other words, you would attract not only the capital or money of U.S. corporations abroad, you would attract investment from foreign corporations coming into the United States. In other words, industry, jobs would be coming back to the United States. I'm emphasizing taxations for a reason. You have to get economic incentives right. And that means you have to get a tax system that encourages what? It encourages business formation. It encourages investment in plant, equipment, vehicles, offices. And a broad-based consumption tax does that. It also encourages individuals to save and invest for whatever reason. Usually, the three or four key reasons, one is for retirement by far. Second is to pay for the college education of their children. Third is some people would like to start a business, so they save for a business. And fourth is individuals know what they want to spend their money on. It could be for a vacation, a second home, whatever. Here's the thing. There's no more capital gains tax. So you encourage the responsible thing to do is to save. Today, we don't encourage savings. United States citizens have the lowest savings rate in the world. At one time, it was negative. It's in the single digits. In some countries, it's 20, 30, 40%. China, I think it's 38%. You want to encourage the American people to do the responsible thing, and the responsible thing is to invest and save their money for what their objectives are. Retirement, college education for the children, to start a business, or it might be to buy a home, a house, whatever, a down payment. And with a broad-based consumption tax, no more income taxes, no more payroll taxes, there's only one single tax, and that is the broad-based consumption tax. It's not regressive at all for the simple reason you have that tax prebate. And what it does is encourages businesses across the world, not only U.S., but foreign corporations, to now see the United States as a terrific place to invest. Why? There's no tax on capital and there's no tax on labor. In other words, businesses don't pay taxes. You pay taxes when you consume new goods and services. Now let's continue.
Senator Rubio, one of the biggest fiscal challenges facing our country is our entitlement programs, particularly Social Security and Medicare. What policies will you put forward to make sure these programs are more financially secure?
Well, first let me address the tax issue, because it's related to the entitlement issue. And I want to thank you for holding a substantive debate where we can have debates about these key issues on taxes. Here's the one thing I'm not going to do. I'm not going to have something that Ted described in his tax plan. It's called a value-added tax. It is a tax you find in many companies in Europe, where basically businesses now will have to pay a tax both on the money they make, but they also have to pay taxes on the money they pay their employees. And that's why they have it in Europe, because it's a way to blindfold the people. That's what Ronald Reagan said. Ronald Reagan opposed the VAT tax because they said it was a way to blindfold the people so the true cost of government was not there for them. Now, you can support one now that's very low, but what is to prevent a future liberal president or liberal Congress from coming back and not just raising the income tax, but also raising that VAT tax? And that VAT tax is really bad for seniors, because seniors, if they are retired, are no longer earning an income from a job. And therefore, they don't get the income tax break, but their prices are going to be higher because the VAT tax is embedded in both the prices that businesses are charging and in the wages they pay their employees. When I am president of the United States, I'm going to side with Ronald Reagan on this and not Nancy Pelosi, and we are not having a VAT tax.
I'm totally, completely in agreement with Marco Rubio and Ronald Reagan. A value-added tax, a VAT tax, is a bad idea. Now, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz don't call it a value-added tax, but it is. That's part of their tax plan on businesses. And Rubio is right. What happened in Europe is, yeah, they all start low. The income tax started low, a couple of percent, and only really the super rich at that time paid it. Very few people paid income taxes, and the same thing happened in Europe. The value-added tax was a small percent. Then it got increased, and it's hidden. You don't see it, but it's in the price of the goods. And the Democratic Party, that's the tax that they really want, is a value-added tax. And Nancy Pelosi is pushing it. And the last thing I want to see is a value-added tax, and I will oppose any candidate, Republican or Democrat, that's proposing it. I think that's one of the reasons Rand Paul's, there are a lot of reasons Rand Paul is running 3%, 4%, 5% on the polls, but I read his plan. I said, what's this? And it is a value-added tax. Now, he doesn't call it that, but that's needed to make his plan work. I said, why in the world would you do this? It is a very bad idea. It's not transparent. It's a gimmick, folks. And then you get stuck with not only an income tax, you get stuck with a value-added tax. And that bankrupts, that means you have less and less money. That enables bigger and bigger government. It's a terrible idea. And I don't support Marco Rubio. He's an establishment candidate. I don't support his tax plan either. But regarding value-added tax, he's 100% right. It's an atrocious idea. Now let's go a little further.
Senator. Maria, I assume
Senator Cruz,
I can respond
to
that.
Yes, of course.
Well, Marco has been floating this attack for a few weeks now, but the problem is the business flat tax in my proposal is not a VAT. A VAT is imposed as a sales tax when you buy a good. This is a business flat tax. It is.
No, it's not a sales tax, Senator. You might be a great lawyer. It's imposed on businesses. On the value, it's called value added because you're adding value. You might think it works like a retail sales tax, but it isn't. And he is another fair flat taxer. Now, I generally agree with Ted Cruz's plan, but it does include, at least my understanding of it, a value-added tax. See, they don't want to call it that because that's a red flag. Alarm bells should go off. So let's listen a little bit more to Cruz.
It's imposed on businesses, and a critical piece that Marco seems to be missing is that this 16% business flat tax enables us to eliminate the corporate income tax. It goes away. It enables us to eliminate the death tax. If you're a farmer, if you're a rancher, if you're a small business owner, the death tax is gone. We eliminate the payroll tax. We eliminate the Obamacare taxes. And listen, there's a real difference between Marco's tax plan and mine. Mine gives every American a simple flat tax of 10%. Marco's top tax rate is 35%. My tax plan enables you to fill out your taxes on a postcard so we can abolish the IRS. Marco leaves the IRS code in with all of the complexity. We need to break the Washington cartel, and the only way to do it is end all the subsidies and all the mandates.
Now, a couple of points. And this is what really, as much as I like Ted Cruz, and of the four candidates that are still in the race, he's number two. Rand Paul is my number one choice, but I don't like Rand Paul's tax plan, and that would give me great reservations if I were to vote for him. The same goes for Ted Cruz. See, what annoys me is Ted Cruz, and I probably will spend some time digging this up. He thinks a fair tax is the way to go, but it's too far. We never could get it passed. Excuse me. If you leave the income tax in place, it's only a matter of time before the Democrats win and the rates go back up. And the IRS is still there. You still have the compliance cost. I agree. I don't want take corporate income taxes to zero, gift taxes to zero, payroll taxes to zero, personal income taxes to zero, no more capital gains to zero, and no more alternative minimum income tax. The answer is a fair tax. He won't take that final bold step. He admits it, it's the best plan, but he won't propose it. He doesn't have the guts to be bold. And you want to scream. He's that close, but he won't take it to a fair tax. Now let's play a little more.
In the final observation, he invoked Ronald Reagan. I would note that Art Laffer, Ronald Reagan's chief economic advisor, has written publicly that my simple flat tax is the best tax plan of any of the individuals on this stage because it produces economic growth, it raises wages, and it helps everyone from the very poorest.
Okay, a couple of points. I like Arthur Laffer, Mr. Supply Side and the Laffer Curve. Here's the problem. There's two problems here, and you need to understand this. Who is against a broad-based consumption tax? All the people at work on K Street, that's with the lobbyists. Their expertise is on the income tax. And they've been lobbying and making the code, the regulations, more and more complicated year in, year out. If you do away with the income taxes, personal, corporate, gift, estate, payroll, they're out of a job. And they'll fight you. The real estate industry will fight you. That's why Donald Trump isn't for a fair tax or fair tax less. I want to grow the economy and get it booming again and attracting industry and investment to the United States. And that is exactly what the fair tax does. And it makes sure it's not regressive. And I warn you, all these plans that keep it as an income tax, the big risk here is the first time another Democrat or Republican gets in office, what are they going to do? They're going to increase the rates. They'll go from let's say we did get a flat rate. They'll want a second rate, a third rate, a fourth rate. That's what's happened over time. It's this game they play. They want to play the tinker game. Here's my idea of lowering the rates. And I've been guilty of this. I used to play the game. Well, why don't we do this? There are people on the radio. Well, we need to reduce the corporate tax rate to 25%. No, 20%. Cruz, zero. Well, that's my point. It should be zero. Make the personal taxes zero and the payroll taxes zero. Now, somebody say, well, how are you going to pay for government? You're going to pay with a broad-based consumption tax. The big savings right off the bat is you do away with compliance costs and you do away with the cost of the IRS. Now let's continue.
To the very richest.
But that's not an accurate description of the plan. Because, first of all, you may rename the IRS, but you're not going to abolish the IRS because there has to be some agency that's going to collect your VAT tax. Someone's going to be collecting this tax.
He's right. But here's the difference, for example. And he's zeroing in on the value-added tax. Amen to that. I don't want any part of any plan that has a value-added tax. Really, what is the value-added tax designed to do? First, it hides the tax. You pay it when you buy a good, and they're going to increase it. Rubio's right, and I'm not a Rubio fan at all. But Rubio is not right when he's talking about the IRS. Yeah, you're going to need some people in the Department of Treasury making sure that businesses pay the tax. But what we're talking about here is a software changed. So when you go check out, it records that 20% of the price you paid for the good is the tax. And that tax first gets submitted to the state, and the state turns around and sends the money, probably weekly, to the Department of Treasury. You don't need tens of thousands of people going over tax returns. There's no more tax returns. There's no more cost and time involved with tax returns. No more returns. No more 70, 75,000 pages of the tax code and the regulations. That's all gone. It's too complicated. No one understands it. Yeah, we might need 1,000 people as opposed to tens of thousands of people. And no more tax preparers, by the way. There's another group that'll stop it or try to oppose you.
In fact, when Ronald Reagan's Treasury looked at the VAT tax, you know what they found? That they were going to have to hire 20,000 new IRS agents to collect it. The second point, it doesn't eliminate the corporate tax or the payroll tax. Businesses will now have to pay 16% on the money they make. They will also have to pay 16% on the money they pay their employees. So there are people watching tonight in business. If you are now hit on a 60% tax on both your income and on the wages you pay your employees, where are you going to get that money from?
See, Rubio's right. This is trying to hide it from you. Both Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are trying to hide it from you. Now, I'm looking at the time. I have to wrap it up. So I have a complete video. I'm hitting this issue because you have to get tax incentives, economic incentives right. And everyone that is truly looked at the fair tax, the conclusion they come with, we should do this right away. I've explained my version of it. Everyone I've explained it to, they love it. Why? They don't pay payroll taxes. They don't pay income taxes. They don't pay capital gains tax. They don't have to fill out tax returns. They get a $1,000 a month check, and they pay taxes as they spend their money. It encourages investment, savings, and it creates jobs, jobs, jobs. It encourages investment in the United States. Our economic growth rate would go to 4, 5, 6%. We would have virtually no unemployment, and investors around the world would come to the United States. Yet we're still messing around with a legacy income tax, no matter what the rate is, whether it's flat or 3 or 4, or whether you have a value-added tax. That is suboptimal. It's legacy. It's the old way of thinking. And that, unfortunately, is all of the Republican candidates. Forget about the Democrats. They just want higher and higher taxes and a value-added tax. So this is a very important part of the debate, and that's why I'm playing it. It looks like I might have a few more minutes. Let's see what I
can do. You're going to get it by paying your employees less and charging your customers more. That is a tax. The difference is you don't see it on the bill, and that's why Ronald Reagan said that it was a blindfold. You blindfold the American people so they cannot see the true cost of government. Now, 16% is what the rate Ted wants it at, but what happens if, God forbid, the next Barack Obama takes over and the next Nancy Pelosi and the next Harry Reid, and they decide we're going to raise it to 30%, plus we're going to raise the income tax to 30%. Now you got Europe.
Rubio is exactly right, and see, that's why I'm not happy with Ted Cruz's tax plan. He knew that the fair tax was the way to go, and he didn't do it. He copped out. He's not being bold. Oh, he's very articulate. He's a good debater, and I know a lot of conservatives like him, and I like him. He's my second choice. Rand Paul is just as bad. He has this value-added tax because they listen to advisors. See, most of these people are attorneys, articulate attorneys. They're not economists. They're not experts in taxation. They rely on experts to give them a plan, and they go sell it. And it's not the optimal plan. It won't turn America around. You won't make America great again. I'm not happy with Donald Trump's, although it's better. It's better than the current system, but it's the same income tax. That's the problem. It's the status quo. Now, I have a little more time. Let me play a little more.
I'd like to interrupt this debate on the floor of the Senate to actually answer the question you asked, which was on entitlements. Do you remember that, everybody? This was a question on entitlements.
Oh, I'll answer the reason,
now you already had your chance, Mark, you blew it. Here's the thing. The fact is, the reason why that no one wants to answer entitlements up here is because it's hard. It's a hard problem.
Chris Christie is right. And this leads to my final point. I'm going to have to wrap up the show. Under a fair tax-less system, whatever you collect in a year, the next year, the budget of the federal government is 90% of your tax collections. The remaining 10% goes to pay down the debt, and that's it. That makes the job of congressmen and senators difficult. They have to do the hard lifting. And yeah, you got to close departments. You got to cut budgets. And where the money is, the big money is in entitlements, both for welfare, Social Security, Medicare, because we have today unfunded liabilities of over $100 trillion, and it's going up, up, and up. We have to get spending under control. That means closing down permanently federal departments. That means cutting the budgets of those remaining departments. And yes, Mr. Christie is right. You're going to have to reform Social Security and Medicare. Otherwise, in the not too distant future, it goes broke. It doesn't have enough money. That's why you need to have higher growth rates in the United States by attracting investment and making sure every American is working. They'll want to work because they have the incentive to work. They'll save for their retirement, for college, for a house, or a vacation, or start a new business. You'll grow your way out of the mess we're in, and you won't do it with tinkering or tweaking the current income tax system. And that means you have to control spending and balance the budget, and that's an important link. Let me repeat it. Let's say this year we had a consumption tax, and it collects $3 trillion. $3 trillion. That means next fiscal year, only 90%. It could be less than 90%. It doesn't have to be 90%, but 90%, $2.7 trillion would be your budget, federal budget. That's what the government could spend. The other balance, the $300 billion, would go to pay down the debt. And that means our representatives in the House and the Senate would have to do their jobs, would have to balance the budget, actually have surpluses to pay down the debt. So I agree with Christie. You see, taxes and spending go together. The big problem today is out of control federal spending. And I mean it's out of control and you can't keep doing it. Ultimately, it means the United States government defaults by decreasing the value of the purchasing power of a dollar through inflation. And that's what will happen. You'll have our interest rates will go up, up, and up. And that will see, if you do nothing, then you can't do it. You can't try to reform it in an orderly way when you have time. And that's the way we're going. Do nothing, kick can down the road, and it's going to blow up. We'll be like Greece by 2030, if not sooner. And then we'll have unrest. People won't be getting their checks. You don't think we're going to have civil unrest when that happens? You see, you have to get economic incentives right. You got to get tax policy right. You got to get a tax system that encourages investment, encourages business and business formation, encourages people to work hard, not be satisfied with $60,000, but want to make $300,000. Today, we penalize success. And the important point here, we protect the middle class. The people that are making less than median income, both as an individual or household, will be paying no taxes. Those that are truly successful and spend a lot of money will be paying more taxes. That's how it works, and it would fund Social Security as well as Medicare. But you need to think out of the box, and none of these candidates do. They're going after each another and convincing no one, because no one was bold enough, with the exception of Mike Huckabee, but he wasn't the ideal person to explain this. Really, Rand Paul, Donald Trump, and Ted Cruz, and Ben Carson, if any of those candidates had come out for the fair tax or their version of it, my version of it, combined with making illegal immigration, illegal alien invasion, stopping it and reversing it, if they had gotten the economic incentives right, in other words, the right tax system together with stopping and enforcing immigration law, that person will be president. Donald Trump has half of it at most. That's why he's fourth on my list. But none of them have the tax policy or their tax plans. It's second best, third best, fourth best, tenth best. Oh, it's better than the existing system, but that's a disaster. We're trying to turn around this country, change the direction the country's in. In other words, have boom times, have peace and prosperity when their unemployment rate is 2% or less. And you're not going to get there by minor changes, really, in the tax code. And remember, the income tax started a couple of percentage points for the very, very wealthy. It was to sock the rich. Now everyone is paying for it, and it's destroying this country. You got to get that right. And that's why I spent time going over the taxation part of this debate. It was a very important section of the debate, but the problem is, did you hear anything about the fair tax? I didn't. Did you hear anything about fair tax less? Not surprising, no. Did any of the candidates have even a version of this? No. They can't think out of the box. You got a bunch of attorneys. Largely, these people are attorneys, and they're articulate. And some are good debaters. They're litigators. They can go in the courts. But in terms of coming up with strong economic incentives that encourages entrepreneurs to start businesses, and then once their business is successful, to hire more and more people and invest in plant, equipment, offices. That's what we need. And we don't have a tax system that does that. We simply don't. And it's very expensive just to comply with it. It very much invades your privacy. And it requires tens of thousands of IRS agents, employees, and it also requires tens of thousands of tax attorneys and accountants to prepare tax returns. All that is a waste, a complete waste. Over $500 billion every year wasted on this because of a legacy tax system. We have to get our economic incentives right. We have to get the tax system right. Go eliminate, replace in its entirety all income taxes, all gift taxes, all capital gains taxes, all alternative. Do away with that. Replace it with a single tax, the fair tax less or fair tax. I got the signal. I got to close it up. Thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.